painful sometimes. Can feel painful to see how much we've been asleep to ourselves. This quality that is awake already, it's not something you create or cultivate or achieve. It's already an aspect of who you are, this bright, knowing, awake faculty. And if you have any doubt about that, do this quick experiment. Settle back, and I want you to just pay attention as I do. Before your mind says, I wonder why she did that, or can you see this capacity that can simply hear, it's simply awake, there's nothing you have to do. It's the same as if you open your eyes now and if you have good eyesight, the fact that if you look ahead of you and let the colours of the, I don't know, here, look at these, here we are. Before your mind goes, ooh, what lovely tulips. Just let the colour come to you. Can you see that there is an awake faculty that simply knows, registers, colour? It's like as clear as day, before even the word red or yellow or Holland or, you know, whatever else you think. And this kind of knowing is so immediate that we overlook it. But it's always here, it doesn't go anywhere. All of the patterning, all of that programming that comes, and all the good programming and all the difficult programming, it all keeps continuing on. And it's always going somewhere. Or wishing it wasn't going somewhere. Right? It's ceaseless. It's samsara, actually. It's a kind of a continual wandering on. This aspect that knows, that recognizes, it's the same as, you can use other words, you can, you know, there are many, many different words. But this kind of knowing is always here, right? And always available, and we can wake up to it right in the middle of our most painful program. The program where I'm totally contracted and full of anger, or I'm really feeling like a nobody. It's like no one sees me, no one loves me, and we've kind of shrunk into a small little shell. Right in the middle of that, this knowing, bright, awake faculty can recognize, oh, hi, look who I've just become. Hi. Meeting that with compassion. Some of these are very painful. The Buddha, you can look into two very simple categories. He talks about the clinging to becoming and the clinging to non-becoming, or the craving for becoming and the craving for non-becoming. So let me make that very practical for you. The craving for becoming is when we lean in and we're doing something so that we can be a better one of those, or a different one of these, or a more special one of those, or a not so bad a one of those. We're going to become someone later, hopefully at 5 o'clock, and right? Or at least if I do a few more years of practice, I'll be a, right? Got that, it's more obvious form of grasping, right? Some, but the spiritual one, the trick, the trap for meditators, we can do that one because we want to be, you know, more spiritual, more shiny, a bigger, better, whatever. What do you want? Cooler, smarter, more dispassionate, more passionate, more fill in the blanks for you. More. Or we can have the clinging to what he called non-becoming, which spiritual egos are a little bit, it's a little trap for spiritual egos, where we're trying not to become anything, because becoming is really not cool. Right, that's what all those narcissistic people do. I'm gonna settle back and be a nobody. So I'm gonna be, whoops, a And there we've created another little hole for ourselves, another little hideout in a way. Wanting to avoid, wanting to not be disturbed, wanting to, how do I get out of this uncomfortable predicament of myself? I know I'll go on retreat, right? And we can, and I'm caricaturing them a little bit to help illustrate and start to see those patterns in ourselves. And of course we put these same patternings onto our meditation, don't we? So what patternings might you be applying to your meditation? I'll tell you a few of my favorites. So that you can start to see them, the way that rather than waking up, our practice becomes a continuity of selfhood. It becomes a continuity of this isolated, limited sense of self who's now a meditator and trying to be a better one of these. Rather than to the release from building, keeping building, keeping constructing, keeping spinning the plates as if they give me some kind of home, because they don't. So does anyone have this pattern in their meditation? One of my friends told me about it. He said he'd been practicing, and you know, we can get into some very deep grooves in our meditation that aren't necessarily helpful, but at some point we wake up. If we stick with the practice, we wake up to what we're doing. That's the beauty of waking up. We can laugh at ourselves and go, oh my goodness. He said he'd been practicing for several months, I think, in Thailand, and came back to England, went to a fun fair or a, you know, village fair somewhere, where they have this game of this piece of drain pipe with a stocking stuffed with something, and it's made into a little mole, and the mole goes whizzing down, it's not a real mole, goes whizzing down the drain pipe, and when it comes out at the bottom you have to whack it. It's called whack-a-mole. And you have to be really quick to kind of bonk it on the head. And he started to see this game, and he said, oh my God, that's what I've been doing in my practice. Right? Every time a thought popped up, bonk. Every time it's like, how quickly can I kind of whack these moles back into the... Yeah. Does anybody know that? It's like we get a little heavy-handed, and it's not mindfulness really, it's aggression in that moment. It's like mustering all our aversion for ourselves, actually. It's really quite sad, but it's also, you know, we can look on the funny side of it, hopefully. It's really quite sad. We're kind of hurting ourselves actually every time we do that, right? And it can become such a knee-jerk kind of thing. Another one I saw in my mind, similar through aversion, is where the practice is hijacked by our underlying unskillful tendencies to aversion, was being able to get a little quiet in the mind, but there was this kind of way I was just freezing out the edges. Like kind of blowing cold ice on all the thoughts. Right? Mind wouldn't kind of hassle me too much because you could just... I mean, I wasn't literally doing that. But there's a way that I'm consciously freezing. It's like trying to still things. Trying to still things. Like stillness is what I want, so I make those still. A little bit teeth gritting. And at some point we wake up to that. Right? There's no thoughts bothering me, but my goodness me. I've become solid as a rock. Belly's tight, heart's tight, hands are tight, but the thoughts aren't bothering me. Very good, but you know, is that freedom? No. So we are going to see and wake up to the very patternings we bring to our we'll bring the same patterns to our meditation that we know already in our mind. I'm not good enough. I'll never get this. Or has anyone had the, I've been doing this 15, 20, 30, 10 years. I've been doing it however long. I've been doing it this long and I still haven't. And when am I going to get comfortable? Which is kind of really where the sentence is going. When am I going to be able to retire? When am I gonna get to that place where I can? And that's one of the patternings. But we keep bringing it to the meditation and kind of groaning and and the ironic truth is, you won't. We don't. We wake up to those very things that think we have to become someone else and think we shouldn't be who we are. We wake up to those very formations that are spinning us in the world every day. Not just on our cushion, but every day. The way we speak, the way we open the door, the way we go into the shop and we're either, oh, sorry to disturb, sorry I'm here. Sorry I'm here at all. Some of us have that as such a strong program, we don't even know it's a program, we think it's just politeness. Mm-hmm. Sorry I exist. You know, it's a more English cultural program. You know, someone bangs into you and you say, sorry I was here. Sorry I was even here that you could get in my way. A lot of these things we take as truth, until we keep practicing, the mindfulness deepens, the investigation deepens, our natural love for the truth of what really delights the heart has a chance to deepen, and we start to wake up to ourselves. And we can sometimes feel a little sad of how long we've been lost, but not judging that, recognizing, yeah, this is the moment that I can wake up. So whether our meditation takes on the program of wanting to avoid, or wanting to become, or wanting to duck out of responsibility. Sometimes we need a break from responsibility and need nourishing, but sometimes we can have it as a little bit of a strategy, right? And to really bring kindness to those things when we wake up to them. They don't make us wrong or bad, they make us human. They make us human, and what makes us even more human is that wish to see what's really going on here, to see what's really true, to discern the difference between all the contents, thought, feeling, sensation, all my reactivity to it, the pushing and the pulling, and the resting back. Not defined by any of that. And that is a falling awake. It's not something we can do. It's something that is actually quite natural to us when we've understood how compelling these patterns are and we work with the mechanisms of those. Let's see, what's the time? So in the Buddhist tradition, you find more or less two orientations to waking up. There's many, many practices, but you could broadly say two orientations to awakening. One is where we're looking into the kilesa, or we're looking into the what obscures us from knowing the freedom, the unobscured, the unhindered, unobstructed, unlimited nature of mind. That's not what's spoken about. It says, what's in the way? What do you keep getting snagged to? What do you keep getting snagged by in your mind? And we look in and investigate those, the places where we keep hooking on, because the mind likes to bond. We like to say, yeah, this is who I am. I'm really, really, really good. Or, no, I'm really, really, really bad. We like to hold on to something. The other orientation is not to investigate those so much, but to wake up right now, here and now, to this bright, awake, knowing aspect of mind. But it's already here, it's already unlimited. It's just in the moment that we don't see it, we keep getting caught and snagged and pulled and pushed and... Right? Today, the morning, this orientation is a little bit more towards investigating where we get snagged. But we don't want to make this another snag. Because there'll be snags. There'll be snags. It's not like we sort all our snags out and then I'll get liberated. We can actually, there can be a liberating quality right here and now as we see ourselves in the middle of the snag and we breathe out and go, wow, look at that. Look at that as it starts to dissipate and fall and crumble, and here we are, awake, simple, undefended, human. So not making the investigation another snag, right? I have to got to now up to uproot all my snags. They're still my snags. I've only done number one. I've got 20 more snags. 20 more years left. I should manage all my snags. Right? No. We're then doing another. We're making, waking up another program. Can you see? So there's something quite radical, actually. And why we don't want to let go of programming. I mean, there is useful programming, I have to say. There's very, very skillful programming that we have. We can have very wholesome, beautiful habits that support us to wake up. There's something very radical about recognizing that right here and now, actually, the full Four Noble Truths are right here. The truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, which is the clinging and the craving and the... And the liberation from suffering, the third noble truth, the waking up, the realization, that's also here. And the path to that is also here. And are we willing to accept that radical invitation that actually it's all right here, it's not later on, actually. It's all right here. Clinging, the self I become, the release from that, and the path. See what your mind does with that. No, not for me. Not for me. I've got too much neurosis for that. Or, yes, that's me. I'm gonna, right? And see what it's like to take on the invitation. Would we be willing to let go of the meditator? And that doesn't mean we don't meditate. But that identity that believes that we've got another mission going here. In one tradition I practiced in, they don't give instructions of mindfulness of breathing or investigation, actually. They sit upright, and the instruction is, 30 minutes, make your mind bright. Can't really do that, can you? I just want to offer that as a balancing in case we're building ourselves, which we all do, a kind of spiritual ego, meditation ego. We can be kind to that too, this one who thinks she's a meditator. Dear love, how sweet you are. You think you're a meditator. So let's practice a little bit, let's stand for a few minutes and I'll guide us into the next part.